discerninghearts.com, and Spirit Catholic Radio, in cooperation with the Pope Paul VI Institute, presents Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. Dr. Hilgers, after being deeply touched by the teachings of Pope Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae, founded the Pope Paul VI Institute for the Study of Human Reproduction in Omaha, Nebraska. Dr. Hilgers, along with his co-workers, developed the Creighton Model Fertility Care System. He would go on to discover Napro technology. In 1994, Pope John Paul II appointed him to full membership in the Pontifical Academy for Life. And with his wife Susan, Dr. Hilgers serves on the Pontifical Council for the Family. Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. We are focusing on the healing of women at this part in the series. And there has been a term that has come up very often. We kind of discussed it a little bit at some aspects about what endometriosis is. Mm-hmm. Help us to understand why that is such an important diagnosis.
Well, endometriosis is a condition which actually causes a lot of difficulties, not only in terms of reproduction, such as infertility and miscarriage. Mm-hmm. It's also associated with tubal pregnancies, but at the same time, it's also associated with a lot of other physical symptoms, some of which can be very, very severe. One of the more common would be something called dysmenorrhea, which is really severe menstrual cramps. Another is called dyspareunia, which is painful intercourse. So you get these, and you can have, frankly, pain every day of the cycle that's due to endometriosis. So pelvic pain of different types is often associated with endometriosis. And if you can identify that it's present, identify where it's located in the pelvic structure of things, then you can also treat it successfully and you can get rid of the menstrual cramps, you can get rid of the pain that it's associated with it. And you could do all of that almost always without having a hysterectomy because, unfortunately, hysterectomy is one of the things that's done for this a lot. And many unnecessary hysterectomies are performed because that's the only treatment really the doctor is prepared to provide. And that goes because when you just go in and remove the endometriosis and leave the pelvic organs, you have to also do it in a way that doesn't cause a lot of scar tissue. So many doctors aren't familiar with that approach. So we've kind of pioneered that and specialized in it at the Pope Paul VI Institute.
I'm familiar with cases, at least in the past, of women who have had endometriosis and have had DNCs. And that, from what I understand, is that scraping of the inside of the uterus to remove that endometriosis. But it seems to me from what you're telling me, in the cases that I'm familiar with, it usually always recurs. Is that the best way of removing that?
No, and a DNC, actually, just to clarify, is not used to remove the endometriosis because by definition, endometriosis are the endometrial cells that are normally inside the uterus that get onto the outside of the uterus. So a DNC, which scrapes only the inside of the uterus, never gets to the endometriosis. So that's a part of it. Now, when they have a DNC, though, they're usually having it because they have abnormal bleeding. Now, abnormal bleeding in the cycle is often associated with endometriosis. But the reason it's associated with endometriosis is because the abnormal bleeding is associated with hormonal dysfunction, which is also associated with endometriosis. If you take 100 women who have endometriosis, you'll probably find that 60 or 70 of them will have pretty significant underlying hormonal dysfunctions. And this includes the estrogen levels around ovulation time, so they have limited mucus cycles and dry cycles. And it's associated with low progesterone and estrogen levels after ovulation. And that leads to premenstrual spotting, 3, 4, 5, 6 days of bleeding prior to the onset of menstruation. And it can also lead to multiple days of real brown, black bleeding at the end of menstruation. We call it tail-end brown bleeding. So somebody charts their cycles with this, they can have 3 out of 4 weeks in the cycle where they're bleeding. But so the doctor hears this, and the doctor says, well, you need a DNC, which will scrape the lining of the uterus, and will remove some of the cells. True. It's good from a diagnostic point of view because cancer is another thing that can cause bleeding like this. So it gives you a pretty good idea if you do or don't have cancer. Now, fortunately, most of the time you won't have cancer, but this does, it's a pretty definitive way of determining that. Now, the reason it comes back again is because the scraping of the lining of the uterus actually doesn't solve the problem. The problem's a hormonal problem. And so in order to correct it, you have to treat the hormones. So that goes back to charting the cycle, understanding where you're at in the cycle, and supplementing the cycle at the right phase. So if you're low in progesterone, you can give progesterone during that phase of your cycle when you need it, which would be during the post-ovulation phase. And because ovulation doesn't occur on any one day in the cycle, but it's somewhat variable throughout the cycle, you need a simple but effective means of knowing when you're ovulating. So once you've ovulated, you can take your progesterone. And the way to do that is to chart your cycle using the Creighton Model System, because that will tell you where you're at in your cycle. So all of a sudden, we've developed a way to give progesterone in a way which is cooperative with the cycle, and won't do any harm, and in fact, it only does good for the cycle. If a woman were to get pregnant in a cycle like that, the progesterone would do no harm. In fact, it would be of help because it would help support the pregnancy early on. And then you get rid of the premenstrual spotting, and oftentimes you get rid of the tail end brown bleeding. It's not universal because there are also some other causes of that kind of bleeding, some of which may be low-grade infection. But most of the time, it's hormonal. So if you get that treated, regardless of the DNC, then you can get rid of the bleeding. And see, the next step, if the bleeding recurs, is the hysterectomy. So then you just take progesterone. You feel a whole lot better because you're progesterone deficient to begin with, and your bleeding goes away and everything's back on track again. But you only know these things. If there's any doctors out there listening to this, they will be revved up because they think, well, I know that. But actually, they don't. And you only know it because they chart their cycles, because then you can put the whole package of the mucus pattern, the ovulation pattern, the different types of bleeding that occur. You can only put it into perspective if you chart your cycles.
Endometriosis is the culprit then on so many different levels. I mean, different issues.
Yeah, it really is. And then you include the infertility, the miscarriages, and the tubal pregnancies that are associated with it. It's really significant. Now, the other side of endometriosis is that, and we have people, a lot of people actually with this, they'll come in with infertility, and they have no symptoms. They don't have painful menstruation. They don't have pelvic pain. They don't have anything that would, they don't have painful intercourse. So they don't think they have any symptoms of endometriosis. They go on the internet, and they look up endometriosis, and it says these are your symptoms, and they don't have those symptoms. And so for actually a long time, in their own mind, they think, well, I don't have endometriosis, so I don't need to be checked for that. But infertility is a symptom of endometriosis, and miscarriage is a symptom of endometriosis, even if you don't have abnormal bleeding or pelvic pain or severe menstrual cramps or anything. And I would say roughly 50% of our people who have infertility do not have any of those symptoms, except infertility. And so infertility all by itself is one of the symptoms of endometriosis. And so, you know, for the listeners out there, if you're having trouble getting pregnant but don't have any of the other signs or symptoms, you still very much may have endometriosis.
Since this is something that occurs even outside of the uterus and in the fallopian tubes and in other areas, can it occur in other parts of the body?
Well, actually, it can, and endometriosis is sort of strange in that regard. It's usually located in the pelvis, but it can involve the appendix, and it can involve the small bowel, and which are real close to the pelvis, in the bladder and other tissues. But once in a while, you'll see it on the diaphragm. You can see it in the lung. You can see it in the spinal cord. You can see it in the spinal vertebrae. You can see it in the brain. There's a lot of different areas where it can be identified. And it's even been identified in men. But that's very, very rare, and it's due to a sort of an oddball sort of genetic thing that occurs, and it's not very significant, but it becomes problematic when you're evaluating people with a lot of different symptoms to be able to find the endometriosis, because, you know, if you have it in the brain, for example, there's nothing specific about that that would t- tell you that it's endometriosis by itself. You do a brain scan or something, a CAT scan, and you'll see something, but you don't know it's endometriosis. But if it gets really worse right around your period all the time, then that would lend some validity to that maybe it is endometriosis. But it can be in a lot of different places.
What are some of the causes of endometriosis?
Well, endometriosis is known now to be genetic. It's passed from one generation to the next, usually on the mother's side. And so we'll see it in families. If you have a group of sisters where one has endometriosis, then usually many of them will have endometriosis, although not all of them. It's also caused by this tissue that's inside the uterus going backwards through the fallopian tubes. And these are endometrial cells, they're called, when they're inside the uterus, and that's actually where the name endometriosis comes from. So then they land outside the uterus. It gets on the bowel, the bladder, the fallopian tube, the ovary, the uterus. And then that's actually, by definition, what endometriosis is. But the question is, really, from a cause point of view, this sort of thing, the tissue going back through the fallopian tubes, occurs in most women. But not everybody has endometriosis. So what is it that separates the women with endometriosis from those who don't have it? And it appears to be the immune system, probably mostly. The immune system in endometriosis is weak. There's an immune cell called the natural killer cell, which is absent in the fluid behind the uterus in women who have endometriosis, or it's very low in terms of how prevalent it is. And those natural killer cells are the cells that absorb the endometrial tissues and get rid of them. Their job is to sort of suck up all these foreign bodies which these endometrial cells become, and it cleans the pelvis out so they don't get endometriosis. So those cells are really low or decreased or absent in women who have endometriosis, and probably the combination of factors then is what leads to endometriosis. And that defect in natural killer cells may actually be more the hereditary factor than the endometriosis itself.
What then is the treatment for endometriosis?
Well, I think, and now there's a different schools of thought, but I'm going to argue for it being a surgical disease, because the medications that we've used to treat it, and incidentally, the birth control pill is still used today, and we're in 2007 when we're recording this, is still used today to treat endometriosis. And I'm here to tell you that birth control pills absolutely 100% do not treat endometriosis. It makes people think they're treating it because some of the symptoms go away. The same thing with a drug called Lupron, and there's a few others that are similar to this, but this creates an artificial menopause. The patients take it for 6 months, it shuts off their cycle, shuts off all their hormones, and they get hot flashes and all sorts of things. It'll help some of the symptoms while they're taking the medication, but they can only take it for 6 months max, and then when they stop it, 100% of the time, the endometriosis returns. And if they're put on it for pain, for example, within 3 to 6 cycles, the pain is back. Mm-hmm. If they're put on it for infertility, it does no good for infertility. It's Lupron is of no value for infertility. And then the third way that is commonly treated today is through a laparoscope using a cautery device. You go and you burn it. But what the cautery does is it kind of smothers the tissue and kind of boils it a little bit. It doesn't look very great.
Right.
It makes you look like you're doing something, but there are still these cells that are present. In our experience with it, and we've got a pretty big series of patients we've studied this with, the recurrence rate was 98%. So
Wow. That
almost always comes back. The only treatment that we really believe in is the use of either laser vaporization, which is done at laparoscopy, or a bigger surgery where you go in and actually physically remove surgically the areas of endometriosis. And the way you choose one versus the other is really how much you observe at the time and where it's located. And if you don't see very much and it's not located in a place where it would be dangerous to aim a laser beam, then you can take care of it at the time of the laparoscopy, which is considered a minor surgical procedure. We can treat about 60% of our patients that way. And the other 40% we will treat usually at a later time with a surgical procedure where we go in and excise and remove all of the endometriosis. The recurrence rate after laser laparoscopy is less than 20%, and the recurrence rate after a surgical procedure where we excise it and remove it is less than 7%. So it's a big difference in how you approach treatment.
We'll return to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers in just a moment.
Spirit Catholic Radio presents Faith Check. Here's Greg Ewell.
Welcome to Faith Check. Many people ask why the Church is against birth control if it allows natural family planning to avoid pregnancy. The Catholic teaching that it is a sin to use contraception is nothing new, but the perennial teaching of Judeo-Christian morality. Only in the 1930s did any Christians begin teaching that contraception could be morally acceptable. The sexual union between a husband and wife is a renewal of the wedding vows, which say that I love you freely, totally, faithfully, and fruitfully. To come together in intimacy while deliberately sterilizing the act goes against the intrinsic meaning of intercourse. It says, I love you, but not your fertility. When a couple has discerned that there are serious reasons to avoid a pregnancy, there's nothing sinful about periodic abstinence during the fertile times of the month. Intercourse still remains a renewal of the wedding vows, a total gift of self that is open to the authentic life-giving meaning of sex. Divorce rates among couples using natural family planning are almost non-existent because couples grow in self-control and respect for one another's bodies, which leads to healthier relationships and even more passionate intimacy. This is Greg Ewell for Faith Check.
We now return to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. This is not just for women who are planning families with her husband. It's not just for someone trying to figure out why they may be infertile. This is about overall women's health, because there are so many other issues that, as you have just stated, that are affected by endometriosis.
That's correct. And like I said earlier, this is really the first family planning system that's networked or connected and integrated, both the family planning part of it, but also the women's health part of it. So that, you know, if you have endometriosis, if you have any other of these conditions, hormonal conditions, abnormal ovulation problems, you can identify them, you can study them, evaluate them if you have to, once you have the charting system down. And so you have the family planning on the one hand, but you have this integrated reproductive and gynecologic health maintenance system that's all part of it. That's the NAPRA technology part of it. So charting becomes something that's good for you as an individual because you are able to monitor your reproductive health. And it's good for your family because you can either achieve or avoid pregnancy as you use it from a family planning point of view. And then, of course, once you get into the abnormalities like infertility and miscarriage, it becomes a really important tool in terms of treatment.
I think this is another classic example of people not appreciating the fruits that come from natural family planning, being able to identify how your body is working. This really is the work of the Spirit when you think about it, because the fruits are not just for the treatment of what it initially began as. So affirming to women to show, look how healthy you can be.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. In fact, when we first started this work, we had no idea that it would move in this direction. We just kept our eyes and ears open. And one thing I did do, being a gynecologist was in this regard somewhat of a blessing, I suppose, to a certain extent, or at least was an added advantage. Because I was interested in the gynecologic conditions and reproductive health functions of the patients I was seeing. And so I had them all charting their cycles. Mm-hmm. And it was 15 years of doing this, not before, but of integrating medical treatments and evaluation, that we were able to introduce the idea of NAPRO technology, which was in 1991, with our little book on the medical applications of natural family planning, the subtitle of which was A Physician's Guide to NAPRO Technology. And then, really, that was 1991, 13 years later, so that's, 28 years of research and investigation, we were able to finally write our definitive medical textbook on NAPRO technology, which uses the Creighton model as its foundational family planning system. So it was an incredible series of events that just seemed to be revealed in front of us as we worked with it. A lot of times people would ask me what my goals and objectives were in this work, and I never had much in the way of goals and objectives. I kept it very open-ended because I didn't know where we were headed. I really wanted to be open-minded to what we were going to be seeing, and it was tremendous that I was able to do that because so much has come to us. In fact, one of my major regrets in this work is, and this is a little bit off, but it's still on topic, and that is that years ago I decided that when our teachers were working with somebody and they became pregnant, that they didn't have to chart their cycles anymore. It was kind of an old idea that once you're pregnant, you don't need family planning, so why chart? But now, 30 years later, I regret not having those charts because there's so many things in pregnancy that show up with these charts. And so now we don't do that anymore. We encourage all of our patients to continue charting during their pregnancies, because there's certain things that happen in pregnancy which show up in these charts, which will lead us to a diagnosis of something that could prevent them from having a premature birth, for example. And so now we're really pulling all that together, but it would have been nice to have it now instead of having to wait now another 5 years to get all the information.
And it's so important for women to be able to know what's going on in their own bodies. I think we talked about this previously, that to say that charting is somehow an odious burden that would be placed on women, they would never want to do that. But then, as you pointed out, to tell a diabetic that don't chart your insulin or your blood sugar.
Yeah.
I know there are various things to monitor ketosis going on in your body. You would need to know what's happening in so many different levels. And yet, why is this not being encouraged? I don't understand. Or why does it seem as though it's somehow too complicated?
It's a good question, and it's not easily answered. And I don't know all the answers about it all. I do know that there's a really significant amount of prejudice and bias that exists within the medical profession. I've often thought that sometimes it has to do with their own sexuality views, their own personal sexuality views, and they have these sense that people can't develop a self-mastery of their own sexual impulses and passions, and they think it's impossible. And that's an easy way out, of course. If they believe that, then it's you just thrown out the baby with the bathwater, you know. And then there's the sort of the intellectual thing. But you know what's happened more and more and more is that you get right down to it. They've just totally ignored the research that's there. They've just totally ignored it. They don't know it exists because they've ignored it. They haven't read it. One of the things that's happened in medicine in the last 10 or 15 years especially is more and more there's so much research out there and there's so much to keep up with that more and more our professional organizations, such as the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, they will issue treatment protocols, evaluation plans, that sort of thing for different types of conditions. And so as they speak, so does the profession practice. But, you know, their newsletters are loaded with contraceptive advertising, birth control pills, and all sorts of these things. I mean, they're absolutely got a conflict of interest when it comes to anything with regard to natural family planning. And so it gets short shrift completely. You can't even submit good research to these journals anymore and get a fair hearing. So, you know, one of our things for the future is to develop a medical journal that will be able to take research, good research that's being done in this field, and have a place for it to be published, because it's become almost impossible to find a place where these people with their biases and prejudices exist. And yet what you say is so, I mean, why would it be such a big problem to have somebody track their cycles? It isn't, but they make it a big problem, and so then it becomes a big problem. But not because it should be.
And when we look at the damage that endometriosis does to our bodies, and it seems to cause so many other things, I mean, everything from a difficulty during your menstrual cycle when you have, you know, very difficult cramping, or you have ovulation is placed in a regular pattern. And not to mention, as we have in the past, the spontaneous miscarriages and infertility. There are so many things that we can discover about this through just engaging. We can be a part of this.
Yeah.
Instead of when these illnesses occur within us, we want to complain and groan and give me a pill and make it feel better.
Right, right.
And then the next month you're gonna feel the same way. I mean, right. I hope that there is some guidance in leadership, not only from the church to say, you know, encourage you to learn more about this, but also women need to stand up and bring this to light.
Yeah, well, I really agree with that, especially the last part. Women really need to become more vocal in all of this and in many ways lead the way. That's an area that, you know, people will listen to a little bit better. One of the really good examples of this, though, is the young girl who is, say, 15, 16, 17 years of age who has severe menstrual cramps. And she goes to her local doctor, and the first thing the doctor does is put her on birth control pills. We have now a group of 30 or 40 patients. I don't have the exact number yet, but anyway, what I do know is that the average age is about 17. They've been put on birth control pills. They've been brought to us usually by their mothers because they don't want them on birth control pills anymore. And they want to know, what can we do for the menstrual cramps? And we have now laparoscoped these patients. Every one of them, 100%, have endometriosis. And so we've lasered it and treated it surgically, and their menstrual cramps get better, and they can lead a normal life without birth control pills, without even much in the way of pain control at the time of maybe one or two ibuprofen, and that's all they need for their menstrual period. And it all, is kind of the way it's supposed to be. And their endometriosis is treated so that in terms of whatever long-term effect it may have on their future fertility, that's gone. And it's under control, and they shouldn't have a long-term impact on their fertility, which is really important.
Well, it's empowering for the patient as well as the doctor. I mean, you work together. You're a team on trying to figure it out how to heal your body.
Yeah, and that's the way it should be. I mean, it really should be. And it just hasn't been that way too much. There's areas of medicine. Again, the diabetic is a good example of where the doctor and the patient work well together. But that you've got to give the diabetic doctor some credit for believing in education and believing in monitoring and believing in taking sort of track of your blood sugars in this regard. But we need to do that in fertility areas as well, because this is just sitting there for the knowing, instead of going around in blissful ignorance, you could reap the harvest of the information that this will give you.
The one person I don't see in the equation, and maybe this is very crass of me, but it's, I don't see the pharmaceutical rep as part of the equation. I mean, this is something that is not driven by a big industry that is prone to make money. And I know there are a lot of people out there that are decent pharmaceutical reps.
Yeah.
But when it comes to certain products, they would not want to see this area be a place where they're not needed.
No, it's quite true. And there is the pharmaceutical industry as a whole really is not a great friend of this. But we do use some pharmaceuticals. And perhaps in time we could even interest them in being a better participant in all of this. We do see, incidentally, pharmacists now who are very interested in this, and particularly compounding pharmacists who make up certain types of medications which are not generally available commercially.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very interested in this, and we've educated a number of them, and they can go through we have a medical consultant program that's specific for the pharmacist, and they can get a certificate as well in terms of their own training.
Well, hats off to all of them. You've been listening to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. To hear and or to download this episode, along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. To learn more about the work of Dr. Hilgers and the Pope Paul VI Institute, go to popepaulvi.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com, Spirit Catholic Radio, and the Pope Paul VI Institute. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join us next time for Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers.